Yeah, the mutual consent. We have four items on our agenda. But with item number three, the presentation by the Freedom Front Act on proposed amendments to the Comfort and Relief Comfort Amendment Bill. And thereafter, we will ask the department to respond to the proposed amendments and also get the opinion from the parliamentary legal advisor as well as the state law attorney, which will then be followed by a deliberation. Members will be given an opportunity to ask questions of clarity. The we have received an apology from Honorable Mbel from COP, who is running late. We will give now an opportunity to the Freedom Factor to make its presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity, and thank you to the members of the Portfolio Committee. Just a few amendments proposed to the bill. If I have submitted a copy of the proposed amendments with comments. I'm not sure if everybody has received copies of that. Right, so first one, first of clause 3. This amendment in the bill relates to economic impact studies and traffic impact studies that need to be, the results of which need to be submitted to provincial and local government authorities. And I added the word at the end of that, and all of the interested persons referred to subsection 4A2 and subsection 4A2 of section 27 basically say that all interested persons who comment and make presentations on a proposed declaration. So what I'm just adding that is that the interested persons who made submissions, or all interested persons, which will be the public at large actually, also need to be informed of the impact studies that was done so that they can actually make informed decisions when exercising their right to argue altering public, which is to be heard. When you don't have all the information at hand, you cannot make an informed decision and you cannot make an informed proposal or submission in terms of the rights that might be infringed in any future tolling systems. So I would like to move then that that clause also be added. It also supports, of course, the Constitution, which gives us a fundamental right to information, and the Connect Act, basically called the Promotion of Access to Information Act. Then secondly, I don't know if I should just stop there and wait for questions, or should I just continue, Madam Chair? Second concept of the amendment is by inserting the following word in subsection 4C2, which reads, the extent to which any matters raised in those comments and representations have been accommodated, I added the words underlined contemplated in subsection 4A2. And basically the rationale for that is to make sure that SANRAL provided a report to the minister as to how the written comments in presentations of interest persons have been accommodated. So once the impact study reports, socioeconomic impact study and the traffic impact study have been submitted to the wider public, obviously they need to react to that as well, and that reaction must also be submitted by SANRAL to the minister responsible. And that is also in accommodating the RD Ultra and Public rule, and the right to information and the right to be heard. The third clause amendment adds the following word in the substitute clause 4C3, and the original reads, the step proposed to mitigate against the impact or likely impact and an alternative road, and I added the words underlined on the local and national economy. In the comment, I've said it is important that SANRAL also ensure that any challenges identified in the economic assessment be dealt with, and mitigating steps to be imposed at that stage, not only mitigating steps in terms of traffic. As Greens brought now, the clause only relates to mitigating steps taken with regard to traffic challenges. And I think that much of the e-tron system in Gauteng has actually given rise to arguments on the economic effect it would have on Gauteng and larger South Africa. And that needs to be accommodated, I think, in the Act as well. Clause 4, deleting subsection DC3 and correcting the further numbering going forward. The proposed clause allows the Minister to specify the offences and penalties applicable to the owner or user or driver of a vehicle in the event of the non-payment of toll. It's, however, our view that road traffic-related transgressions are being decriminalised by virtue of ARCO, and that private debts have also been decriminalised as debtors cannot be jailed anymore. It is quite disconcerting, and we believe clearly unconstitutional to criminalise conduct that is clearly debt-related and not road traffic-related. This clause was found unconstitutional to humanities, and in that regard, we will ask the President not to sign the bill due to this problem. The President has already shown the willingness to send back bills to Parliament with reference to the Electoral Property Laws Amendment Bill, where the same argument was advanced. So basically, we're just saying that there's a process of decriminalisation of both road traffic offences and normal debt, and as you incur a normal debt by not paying a SANRAL account for the e-toll system, one cannot see that there should be offences and penalties as such from the from a criminal law basis, but it should be dealt with as a debt-related problem, purely debt-related problem. Clause 5. Deleting the inserted subsection 59A1B. I just added the deleted section is also in 59.1A. So 1A and 1B must be deleted. The presumption created herein is dubious on two grounds. Firstly, given the unconstitutionality of various presumptions in criminal legislation, on what basis would the presumption be found to be constitutional? In a magistrate versus the one, it was found that the presumption created by Section 21.1A1 of the Drugs and Drug Trafficking Act was unconstitutional as it clashed with the provision of Section 25 of the Constitution, which provided every accused shall have the right to a fair trial, which will include the right to be presumed innocent and to remain silent during plea proceedings, so forth. Furthermore, despite the Constitutional Court judgment in State v. Meeker in 1998 that such a presumption in the Road Traffic Offences Act is valid as long as it is framed as a mere evidential oath and not presumption by inserting the proviso in the absence of evidence to the contrary, legal scholars such as Birchall in his Principles of Criminal Law expect that no such presumption will survive a constitutional challenge. Secondly, from a practical point of view, this presumption will lead to many false prosecutions. Those vehicles not registered by an ETAC will have to be tracked via the e-matter system that is known to be compromised due to inaccurate data. The JPD has indicated only 30% of the information on e-matters is correct. How will billing thus occur? Many vehicle owners who have sold their vehicles have never been removed from the system. If they are both fined and prosecuted, what will be the cost and extent of the defense, even though they are innocent? Those vehicle owners will thus open many citizens to false prosecution. Clause 6, deleting Section 6 of the bill. The National Credit Act is apex legislation, of which the operational thereof cannot be excluded by another Act of Parliament. Any amendment to the operational sphere of the NCA must be made by amendment to the NCA itself, and that amendment can accordingly only be dealt with by the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. The reasons for this are as follows. Section 2 on interpretation states as follows. The Act, that is the NCA, must be interpreted in manner that gives effect to the purposes set up in Section 3. With regard to Section 3, it states that the purposes of the NCA are to promote and advance the social and economic well-being of South Africans, promote a fair, transparent, competitive, sustainable, responsible, efficient, effective, and accessible credit market and industry, and to protect consumers. Given the purposes outlined in the NCA, it is clear that the protection afforded by the NCA is intended to be available to all South Africans, save the exceptions listed in Section 4. Section 4 provides a comprehensive list of exceptions where the NCA does not have applicability. No mention is made of an exception with regard to toll roads. Any reasonable reader of the NCA will expect any exclusion to be contained in the NCA itself and not in any other number of random acts not known by him or her. A constitutional duty exists to make the law accessible to the average person, and this amendment flouts that duty. Furthermore, Section 12 creates a national credit regulator. Of the provisions is Section 12.1a that states that if the NCR has jurisdiction throughout the Republic, Section 12.1c that states that the NCR is independent and only subject to the Constitution of South Africa, and Section 12.1d that states that NCR must exercise its function in accordance with the NCA. From this it is clear that the NCR and its constituent legislation, the NCA, is accorded a status free and clear from any outside intervention, including that other legislation like the Sunrise Act. Section 12.2 also directs that each organ of state must assist the national credit regulator to maintain its independence and impartiality and to perform its functions effectively. Therefore, the prescription of the NCR's jurisdiction by the Department of Transport is ultra vigorous and in breach of the provisions of the NCA. Section 172 deals with conflict of legislation in a comprehensive way in that it sets out in column form in Schedule 1 which legislation will have precedence. The Sunrise Act is not listed therein. This is indicative of the comprehensiveness and status of the NCA as an autonomous act that cannot be amended except by amending the original act itself. Thereby, in conclusion, the Sunrise Act cannot erase the application of the Fair Act by way of an amending or issued by the Department of Transport. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Can we then have a response by the department?
Thanks, Jefferson. I will hand over to Ms. Aldaranapul to respond to the proposal amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the first clause, we disagree with the inclusion. We feel that it will be a very onerous provision that will be added. As we've seen with previous amendments that have been published, very many interested parties sometimes respond in a very non-detailed manner, and if the requirement was that every single one of those persons should be given a copy of documentation, it would make the entire process very onerous. The promotion of access to information legislation applies to anything that SANRAL does, and it's our position that any person that has made comments would be able to get that documentation, and having it as part of the legislation would make it an impractical proposal. As far as the second clause is concerned, our submission that is unnecessary. The comments that are required and that have to be considered in terms of that provision are already in the introductory paragraph, and it is linked to that paragraph as well. So the comments that are received are the ones that need to be addressed in the report. It does not really add anything to that clause that was added to it. As far as the third provision is concerned, where the requirement is made that there must also be mitigating practices for the local and national economy is concerned, it's a submission that that would be just a very vague statement, and one would be able to continue challenging that in the declaration of the new thorough state, that there would always be something additional that could be challenged and that could be addressed in the report, and it's our submission that that would make the declaration of future thorough virtually impossible if the sentence is added in its current format, where it does not actually place any parameters on what is considered for the local and national economy is concerned. As far as the fourth proposal is concerned, the deletion of the offences, the main offence of failure to pay toll is already included in the Sunrise Act. Section 27.5 already creates an offence to say that a person may not pay toll if he's using such a road. The idea with the paragraph is simply to add additional requirements in terms of that. Perhaps to give an example to members, one may have a person that has obtained an e-tag, and this e-tag may only be used for a specific vehicle. If he changes the e-tag to another vehicle, the system would not work properly, and that one would want to make that an offence. It relates to the main offence of failure to pay toll. And the same may apply to a person that applies for exemption due to a specific reason. They may not actually be entitled to such exemption, but due to the application that they may give some information which are false, and the end result would also be the non-payment of toll. So the idea is simply with that subsection in legislation to allow the minister to elaborate on the Section 27.5 of failure by toll. Say the wording in the paragraph also reads, providing for the offences and penalties applicable to the owner or user of the driver of the vehicle in the event of non-payment of toll. It does not clear toll traffic related infringement offences or infringements. It applies to that. It's not creating any road traffic related offence. That if Sandra needs to rely on that, they will use the existing legislation. For example, if someone assaults another black, that will not be alleged in this legislation. There is already another piece of legislation that deals with that, and it would be possible to prosecute such a person there and then invest in offence. These will just relate to the mechanisms that will be introduced in terms of paragraph A, D, and DB, where the minister is given power to create a registration system and to create a system of payment. And the offences that are linked in paragraph DC will simply be elaborating on section 27.5. As far as the presumption of section is concerned, that is one of the essential elements in this legislation. It is our submission that the Beaker case did already investigate the constitutionality in this regard. The wording in this legislation is similar. The only addition is the extent to which it also applies to civil cases. The Sunroll Act allows for both a criminal and a civil process that may follow against someone that fails to pay toll. The alternative to having a presumption is having to stop people next to the road and requiring the information from them. The intention of the legislator, obviously, not to have to deal with every person in that regard. It's Sandra's opinion that as far as the presumption is concerned, it's not placing any additional burdens on anyone. The current road traffic legislation already contains such a provision. It already requires that the owner is responsible for the vehicle in the event that he cannot supply the details of the driver, and this legislation simply gives him the opportunity to transfer the toll to a user if he was not the person that was responsible, and that the provision should stay in the legislation as is. The last provision dealing with the National Credit Act, on various occasions the Department and Sunroll have obtained legal opinion that the National Credit Act applies to credit agreements. The toll legislation caters for a prepaid system. It does not cater for a system where people are allowed to pay on a credit agreement and where investigations have to be done in terms of their viability to pay. It is a prepaid system that allows for a 7-day grace period. Therefore, it does not fall within the ambit of the National Credit Act. The only reason why this was felt that it was necessary to put it into the legislation was to clarify that point. Due to numerous comments received, as far as the National Credit Act is concerned, and with negotiations with the organisation, it was clear that it was necessary to state it specifically so that people do not feel that they fall under that legislation. It's an incidental debt. People who do not pay was not because Sandra granted them an agreement to say you are allowed to pay in 60 days or 90 days or whatever the case may be. The toll system is prepayment, and there's a grace period to ensure people do not are unnecessarily burdened, so that they have the opportunity to pay if they have used the road and they realize they should have paid. It is not a system where people are being investigated as far as their credibility is concerned so that they can pay off to it. So we feel even if the clause is deleted from the draft law, it would make no difference as far as the legal position is concerned. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Can we get the comments from the Parliamentary Legal Advice?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. In respect of the amendments 1 and 2, if I can call them that, this relates to interested persons. And in the end, I'm of the opinion this is a matter of policy, which will decide whether that should be included or not. What must be kept in mind is what the Department rightly said, it will make it more onerous on the Department. And if this committee decide to include that, I would recommend that the method in which this publication must be done be included. For instance, if we do include that it must be given to all interested parties, or that all those comments must be brought to the attention of interested parties, we have to bring something in to say published in the Government Gazette or published in a paper, because it will be very difficult for the Department to respond to every person. So it's a policy decision. There's no legal pro or con except for that keeping in mind the fact that it might be onerous. In respect of the third, the committee at one stage did consider the wording socio-economic impact In fact, if we look at clause 3 on page 3 of the bill, City D, paragraph B, which includes subparagraph B, capital A, there we look at an impact assessment of socioeconomic and traffic. So we are looking at socioeconomic in the impact assessment. The words of this section, this paragraph rather, that the Freedom Front is requesting to be amended, we must get very carefully, because Schedule 4 of the Constitution says that road traffic regulation falls under Schedule 4, which would make it a 76 bill. So we need to be very careful how we word it. And I would recommend that we maybe perhaps amend that subsection, that paragraph, by reference to paragraph B, capital A, rather than talking about economy, because it is vague to say the local and national economy. That's quite broad. But if it specifically referred to the socio-economic impact that was done, I think that link is already created there, and it can simply be worked on to tie that link. In respect of decriminalization, I think we need to just be careful where we take, because although there could be, I suppose, a very good argument that a toll is not to be equated to a tax, there are many differences between them, it is much more something that looks like a tax or a levy than a debt. Because what you are paying for is the use of a national or a provincial or a local road. It is something that must be maintained by the money that you put in there. So it is slightly different from your normal debt situation. And I think we can all just put our minds to, for instance, tax evasion. That can never be decriminalized, because that is the lifeblood of the economy. So I think we need to just treat carefully. I accept that there's an argument to both sides, but not to the extent that I think the committee needs to make an amendment. Already, the second aspect of the presumption, proposed amendment of presumption, I agree that this has already been provided for, and the committee in fact did debate not the civil aspect but the criminal aspect. That was debated last year. And it was explained to the committee that the toll camera, for instance, will see a vehicle. It won't necessarily see a face. So it was very difficult to prosecute. And the intention here is not to put an undue onus on the person being brought before court. It is simply to allow someone to be brought before court. And then there will be an opportunity to indicate, as the department rightly said, but yeah, on that day I was writing exam, there's my exam paper, and I was not in the vehicle. And that will then be sufficient. In fact, that is how it currently works. You don't even have to go to court. You simply write a letter and say, I was not there, it was this person who drove my car. The last aspect of the National Credit Act, I don't think I can add anything to what the department said. I agree with them.
Thank you. Do we have this take last one?
Thanks, Chief. We have provided a written response to the comments raised by the honourable member. Just to add, in addition to that, I also just want to caution lots of the things we wanted to raise was already raised by my colleague from the Parliamentary Law Advisor and the Department. And basically the one comment relating to notifying the all interested persons referred to Subsection 4A2. If you look at Subsection 4A2, it says has invited all interested, I'm just trying to look at it from a practical interpreter's perspective, has invited interested persons to comment and make presentations on the proposed declaration and the position of the toll plaza. And then it continues, but if you look at years, you want to, the traffic assessment must be made available to all interested persons referred to. Which is, who are these interested persons? Is it only limited to interested persons who commented on, or interested persons who was invited to comment? So interested persons have different interpretations just from a practical perspective. So we need to find which interested persons, because if we make reference to 482, interested persons, who are they? So if you want to notify them, who are we going to notify? It's going to, when we draft legislation, we try and draft it in a manner which will facilitate the objective and give effect to the legitimate government purpose of that proposed legislation. So if you look at, is the legitimate government purpose for this bill? The bill provides that the executive can raise revenue in whichever way they want to, and that was decided also in National Trade Union Others versus Opposition to Tolling a Line in the Constitutional Court. So if you look at the executive can decide how they want to do the business and how they want to manage that in a way which is not in conflict with the Constitution and in a way which promotes government quality. So if you look at it also, if we want to make it, we need to make things clear. And in this case, if you look at all interested persons, who are those interested persons? And here's when we have, like my colleague correctly pointed out, we have this promotion of Access to Information Act, which everybody can use, and the outcome of this impact assessment is subject to the legislation itself. So any joke can have access to that information by using this act. So if you want to put the onus on SADC to provide interested parties for the outcome of that report, it's going to be cumbersome. We need to consider cost implications, practical implications, and it really is called to be policies done. So if you're going to provide all these other things, we don't want to hamper the facilitation of implementing this legislation. So I think if you want to provide interested parties who made representation, yes, they can get it through this, so there's nothing preventing me from getting it through this. But if you can say someone wants to provide interested parties with a copy of the impact assessment, then you're going to say, hold on, you can't proceed because the act said you must provide everybody with this, and this person didn't receive it. If you send it by ordinary post, all of the people may not receive it, and then it's going to hamper the process of this legislation. So I think we need to understand, when we put like just to look at it in plain, simple terms, who are these interested persons? What's the objective for wanting to inform these interested persons? How will facilitate promotion? If this interested person is not provided for in these other legislations, will they be barred from getting the information? No, they won't, because they can access it in terms of the act. So this act helps facilitate that, so it seeks to give effect to the objective or the concern to a or the honourable member. And then the offences and penalty relating to the non-payment of toll, that's already in the Principal Act. The offence was created in the Principal Act already. So this legislation doesn't create that offence. So the board doesn't provide for that. It's providing an act which was already passed by Parliament. Okay? And then, further than that, I've got nothing more to add than what's already there. Thank you.
Can we open for members to ask questions of clarity and also make comments? Honorable Stover.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there is a convergence between the legal people, two legal people. I hope that maybe if you can because the parliamentary legal advice is cautioning us and is giving us some options to look into in terms of whether for the inclusion or not inclusion. We have to be guided so that they write all those conversions and where the division is, where we need to make an input so that we don't take it just at the face value, because we need also to mitigate what has been raised and being cautioned by our legal people. But I think also on the last point, I'm a bit covered, or on the debt linkage that are due to be criminalized, especially when we are saying that it has already been covered in the Principal Act. And as such, what I was going to say, can we debate a little bit on that one so that we get some clarity? But if it's covered in the Principal Act, well, I don't have a problem with that. And also the clarity on the prepaid system as far as the e-pass is concerned. Well, that one also, because I was a bit worried in the manner in which the presenter of coming and said, Chivas, it seems we are running towards another dichotomy. So my last point, if we have to make some alterations, some more input on the Act, then I'm taking this point from the position that I've if you regard with that, if you also have to change its character, the tank, because somebody spoke of Section 36, because when you talk local government or provincial government, we have to change its tank. Now, if we make some changes in this bill, and it has to be, the impact will be on the provinces, the local government. Where does it take us to? Because the Principal Act is very clear I just want to clarify my mind on matter of what I'm raising. The question of the provisions and the local government, in as far as the section 76, because it means you have to add all what has been done, go to public hearing through the NCOP and so on, even ourselves as a comment. Can I just clarify on this issue? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just got several questions and clarities and so on. I hear what the legal advice is saying in terms of the national economic impact. I think I was the one in the committee last year from the DA who fought very strongly to have that socio-economic clause and that clause on the impact on the surrounding municipalities and all of that put into this bill, because we've got, for example, a toll road near Vryheid where these big trucks drive through the centre of Vryheid because they don't want to drive on a toll road, and there's roads disappearing under those trucks. They're so bad. So, I mean, we have spoken at length about that, and the socio-economic impact is already littered in the bill. However, I've got several other questions which I do want to ask clarity and legal advice. I accept the explanation in terms of having to inform everybody. If you get 4,000 individual submissions, and sometimes the people don't put a return address on, and you, thousands of pieces of paper would have to fly around. But that does beg the question of the department. Why can't you just publish the response to the socioeconomic impact in the Government Gazette? See, that's not a lot of paper. And if the department is honest and it's not about hiding the political fallout, then okay, let's forget about that response of all these pages that need to fly around. I accept that. I think it's a valid criticism of the amendment. But why not punish it in the Government Gazette? Because we've already seen sometimes when certain municipalities, the party in power, whether it be the IFP or the DA or the ANC, the party in power doesn't like to give the other parties copies of documents. You've seen that. And I'm not accusing any party. I've mentioned at least three parties. But the party in power doesn't like to give documents to the other parties. Sometimes the socioeconomic impact assessment might sort of be withheld by that city council from other people, from the governing party in that city council. But you see, if you publish it in the Government Gazette, then nobody can hide it. Then the results, the response, the whatever else is officially published. It's one piece of paper, only one piece of paper, and people have to buy copies of the Government Gazette. It doesn't even cross the department that much, really. They publish one copy and then people want to buy copies if they want fair copies. So I'd like to hear a response as to why we can't just publish it in the Government Gazette and you don't need all that other stuff. You know, I wasn't happy, Chairperson, about the presumptions clause. I made it clear last year, but we had a long explanation from the department and we did the basis in depth. And the one thing that worried me about that is not I accept the fact that you will have to introduce a photograph of the car, whatever the case is. But the one question I still have is, what about the cloned number plates? There are up to 6 vehicles in South Africa with the same number plate. And the one is a Bucky, and the other one is a Mercedes-Benz car. But they both got, sometimes there are 2 Mercedes-Benz cars with the same number plate. And we've had people report already to the department that, you know, my car registration was now seen by somebody else, or I got a notice for a traffic fine, but that's not my car. It's my number plate, but some crook has put it on their car. There's a guy in Craig or Park in Johannesburg who did his number plate cut off. And I eventually, as a city councillor, get the Metro Police to camp outside his house. And he started suing us and the council and everybody because he was trying to get away with crime. So we have cloned number plates. And I just, in terms of the presumptions clause, once the legal people and the department to please respond to the question of cloned number plates. Because now you produce a photograph with another plate on, and I'm all to put. It's not my car, it's a cloned one. And then, finally, in terms of the inputs given, there were lots of comments made about the constitutionality of various clauses. Can the legal team please give us a response as to the constitutionality questions. What are the chances of us having a constitutional challenge to those clauses? Because, of course, we want to make a bill that doesn't have to go there. So, those are my questions. If I could just have some clarity and responses to my questions, then I would be happy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any other hand from members. Can I get the response from the legal team as well as the department?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see you want to meet me, so I'll go first. Give me a chance at pictures of the Christians. I think the first question that I will deal with from the Honourable Buddha, asking about the tagging. The tagging issue relates around road traffic regulation, and I have discussed with my colleague on the State Law Advisor. I've also discussed with the committee section, and we debated the matter a bit this side and that side. In the end, I think the argument is going to go both sides at the moment, so it is something that maybe the committee just needs to keep in the back of their mind. Should we amend, I think we must just be very careful that we don't step into that railroad hole, so that we don't trespass onto 76. And an easy way to avoid stepping into that hole would be, rather than using terms like national local economy, because even with local economy, I'm starting to wonder, are we looking at trade? I don't think we are, but questions tend to do come up. And this is going to be a contentious bill, it seems. So one way to avoid that would be to simply refer to the paragraph that actually just says socioeconomic and traffic impact assessment. And if we just make that reference, I think we would be clear. So, but that is only if we do decide to amend. Next question that I will answer, I think that one is more for the department. I think the clone place as well, I think the department will answer, but I can quickly say is the same argument will go. In other words, there will be a notice. The owner of the vehicle will have a chance to respond to say, like he would now with traffic fine. You will get a traffic fine, you will ask for the photograph, you will go and have a look online, you will see that I've got a bucky and this is a truck, and you will simply write in to say, please check the registration, this is not the correct vehicle, and number plate. And then that issue should be sorted there. So it is still a matter just of putting the correct facts before the court. I think there are constitutional challenges. It was a very difficultly put question. What are the chances of constitutional challenges? They are always there. I cannot lie to this committee. They are there. And it is everyone in this country's right to take any act to the Constitutional Court and challenge anything. And quite likely, because of what we're dealing with and because of the emotions that are out there, people will try and take it on constitutionality. In my opinion, however, and of course a court, there's 11 judges there, I'm not saying they all must agree with me, but in my opinion, I do not see any challenges currently that will succeed. I think that the committee is fine on the bill as it is, but in a court anything can happen, but I hope that I can swage some fears. Suddenly a committee will have to make a decision and put a bill past the assembly. Otherwise, we will sit here forever debating whether something, what the court will decide and won't decide. And you always have minority and majority judgments, so even they can't agree, all of them, unanimously. So a decision must be made at some point in time and then go forward. And my recommendation would be that the bill is currently constitutional.
Thank you. I concur with my learned colleagues here. Constitutional, it's, how can I say, many times we get questions and then after the issues raised, people will label it a constitutional matter. We have a constitution, we are still a young democracy. I know we've been so many years, but every day we develop our constitutional jurisprudence by taking matters to the constitutional court. So it may not necessarily be a bad thing if a matter is challenged in a constitutional court. At least it will develop the jurisprudence so it creates more certainty as we move along because we were given a constitution, the law has changed drastically, and this is the supremacy of our law.
So now we need to interpret everything in accordance with the Constitution. So it's not necessarily a bad thing to go to the Constitutional Court, but at least we'll develop the jurisprudence, especially if we have the legal advisors advising that we certify the bill as constitutional. We don't foresee any constitutional, anything that's unconstitutional in terms of our interpretation, our view, and our interpretation of the bill. But if someone takes it to the Constitutional Court, maybe to develop jurisprudence for the court, he may, there are various matters that the court hasn't decided upon. We can interpret in terms of the Constitution that this is constitutional. Someone may come to a different interpretation. Yeah, so I think we shouldn't be too scared to avoid constitutional, but I think maybe what we should caution against is that if something is glaringly unconstitutional, we can fix it here and not take something which is glaringly unconstitutional. But if something is interrogated and we have the view that it's constitutional, I think we shouldn't, you know, hold the hostage to that here, somebody shouting constitutional, unconstitutional, you know, take it to the Constitutional Court. Fine, go ahead. You know, at least we'll develop the constitutional jurisprudence, so it's nothing wrong or bad about it. Okay? And then with regard to the schedule, the tagging of the legislation, yes, we had lots of debate with the Parliamentary Law Advisor, with the Department regarding the tagging of this piece of legislation. And it took fine-tuning, crafting the correct words, terminology, and use to keep it within the parameters of the 75. Because I think the Department's concern was they want to keep the 75 bill, and also to avoid two bills, 75 and 76, to deal with similar matters. So when we look at the Constitution, we look at Schedule 5 of the Constitution. Schedule 5 of the Constitution, Part A. Schedule 5 speaks to functional areas of exclusive provincial legislative competence, and in that it deals with provincial roads and traffic. Now, when we interpret, before when we interpret the recent constitutional judgment to ban, when we interpret the listed items in the schedules to the Constitution, we considered every clause in this bill, and we looked at does it in a substantial measure impact on any of these provisions which are exclusive provincial competence. And to avoid that, that's why we use the word socioeconomic impact assessment, because it doesn't speak to provincial roads and it doesn't speak to provincial traffic, that type of thing. So to avoid that, we had a socioeconomic impact assessment, which will keep it at 75. And even the night when we were drafting the morning, myself and the Parliamentary Law Advisor, we were having debates over the foot from about 9 o'clock right through to the next morning, how to keep it in 75. And we at the Office of the Chief Tax Law Advisor, we are satisfied that this is a 75 bill as it stands, and we are satisfied that it will pass constitutional matter if it's passed in the current state it is in. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. The last issue is the cloning of the number plates and the presumption. As far as the presumptions are concerned, SARL has, as part of these regulations, a possibility to get an e-bag or to be registered and with your number plate, which will obviously be the safest and quickest route to ensure that if someone loans your number plate, you're not going to be charged for that specific toll transaction, for the simple reason every e-tag is linked with a specific vehicle, and the system is set up in such a manner that if that specific vehicle led an additional number plate that is running around with the same number, it might even be exactly the same vehicle, but obviously the e-tag will be different, it will be possible to pick that up immediately. People who register just on their number plates on the system, their information will also be current and update, and it will be possible to determine that another vehicle is using that as well. For those people who do not register, the same procedure would apply to anyone that gets a speeding ticket these days. They would have to go through the process that was explained by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor to ensure that the ticket does not remain in their name. The system also takes three photographs of every single vehicle. So it is possible, even if you have someone that actually goes and clones the vehicle in exactly the same type of vehicle, the same color and so forth, that there may be characteristics on the vehicle which is different, a sticker on the vehicle, a different bumper and so forth. So the system is sufficiently sophisticated enough so that it's possible to determine that it may not be the same vehicle in the vehicle that the person owns. But the presumption makes it quite easy. You simply go and tell them you were not the person that used the vehicle. It was not your vehicle that was photographed, and then that toll charge will not be against your name. So it is not something that we're adding that is not already in the legislation, and the procedures that have been applied to this have been there. Perhaps just on a different topic, the Department of Transport currently in its road traffic legislation is busy preparing a set of regulations for people who are just the same as with their cell phones. And with the bank accounts, have to go and prove their address details when they register on a later system. So hopefully in a year or two we are not going to have the statements that are made currently that a lot of information on the NATO system is wrong. They are currently forcing everybody to go and do that. It's not in law yet, it's coming, and obviously that will assist on law as well, with ensuring that the NATO information is current and up to date, and you do not have people on the system whose addresses cannot be verified.
Thank you, Chief.
Yeah.
Yeah, also from DOD channel perspective, I think at last, the previous meeting, we also discussed at length the clone number plate issue, and that a full solution is available in project by means of the tagging of the vehicle, which is a separate identity which cannot be cloned. And that is the cheapest possible way for people available to make claims to their toll. It's the easiest way for people to register for the system. And that addressed the whole cloned number plate vehicle issue. So the system has been designed to address that. It's up to users to make use of it. They're not forced to make use of it, but they can make use of it. And also, I think it was covered in the previous comments, but the system makes provision for people to nominate, or if they don't want to nominate, to make a representation to sign to say, well, they expect that it's a clone number plate. We also previously reported that if there is a suspicion that there is a clone number plate, the system will assist the South African police and other law enforcement agencies to specifically identify those vehicles on the network as they are traveling, and so it had a bigger purpose of resolving the problem of clone number plates. We asked for more information on that from some of the law enforcement agencies, and I think in many cases the problem is overstated. But there is a problem. We don't disagree that there's a problem. I also then just want to deal with making available information and when you are making available information. If it's about the social and economic impact study, that those reports will have things, for instance, that is made available on our website. So if you look at the process in terms of Section 27 for the declaration of a toll road, making available those states because they would have been done beforehand before we get to the process of advertising publicly. So for me to make sense, it should be available to the public at the time when we go through the declaration process and not be made available after the event, after the comments were received. So I think the issue of how you make it available, we will definitely say it's unpractical to make available to individuals. Placing it on our website or whatever means that is that can be done.
There was a specific question from Honourable Oli, which was saying that why can't the DOT and Sandral publish in the Government Gazette? Can we get a direct response to that? We hear you when you are saying the information is made available in your website, but there was a specific question that requires a specific answer.
Just on the panel side, I think it's a legal issue, so I'll leave it to them. The information is available, so as a principle, the information is available. How it should be published.
Chairperson, the information concerned is not confidential, and I agree with Honourable Ollis that a general notice can be issued depending on the how the volume or how big is the outcome of the socio-economic impact assessment. If it is too big, it's sometimes too costly as the government printers to publish a whole figure document, but you can issue a general notice directing members of the public to look into a particular website of Sandral wherein they can have access to that. And it will only be one pager. The people can go to the website and get the full report there. In fact, what Mr. Alex is saying, that on their website they normally place that particular information. Thank you.
Are you covered, Honourable
Ollie? I'm happy with that procedure. If the whole document is loaded on the website and they publish a note in the Gazette, I'm happy with that. I'm just not sure where we record that decision. Do we have to amend the Act or do we have to pass a special resolution? I'm not sure how we get that written down, but I'm happy with the procedure that has been pointed out by the department.
Honourable Albert.
Madam Chair, I think it must be in the Act. The reason being that when the public consultation process of SANRAL was embarked upon, there was no socioeconomic impact study available. Nobody knew that it even existed. It was on the SANRAL website. Using PIA, most people don't even know PIA exists. People must know exactly what their rights are. And I think that a publication by SANRAL, that public hearing will commence on a certain project, and that if they want to make use of the opportunity to present remarks and comment, then they can also find documentation on the SANRAL website at the following addresses. And that would include all impact studies of whatever nature was embarked upon so that people can make an informed decision. People almost had to go to court to get information from SANRAL. That is not acceptable. Most people cannot afford to go to court. It's only the business interests that came to the fore that allowed for money to be made available to go to court. We cannot let citizens of South Africa rely on going to court only to vest and enforce their rights. I think we must be obedient to the Constitution for right information and facilitate that process and make it easier for people to have access to information. Mr. Van Niekerk's proposal is a very good proposal, and I think if we can just codify it in the Act, then everybody will be safe and happy. Thank you.
Can I get the opinion? Legal opinion on that?
Chair, I think it largely relates to policy issue, but what I can say is that if public participation and access to information of the public is central to our constitutional democracy, and in various judgments, the court has spoke to public participation. That's why we have the public hearings, public participatory processes we have, and greater public, to enhance public participation is a good thing. It's something which the Constitution promotes and supports. But I think we need to, the decision needs to be taken how we're going to do that. What's the least onerous manner in which to do it? Or what a manner which will facilitate greater public participation and enhance public participation? I think that's the core to it. So whatever the committee decides as to how we want to do that, that's led to the committee. But we already have, the Constitution does provide for promotion of access to information. So if anybody needs to get any information, administrative decision, anything, they can get it through this. I think we also need to be careful is that if you want to legislate every process as to how people get information, it may open the door, may create a precedent that in every act that we pass, every piece of legislation we pass, if you want this information will be accessible through these processes. I think we may be opening the door for that, but it's a decision, it's a policy decision which the committee needs to take. But also want to emphasize, yes, public participation is central to the Constitution, it is important, but I think how we facilitate that is also key. Thanks.
Honourable Ollis.
Thank you, Chairperson. The DA reserves our rights as an independent party, so I'm not agreeing with any other party or disagreeing with any other party. But I'm very strongly disagreeing with your comments. And let me tell you why. The Democratic Alliance have been trying for in excess of 5 years through every possible avenue in the Republic of South Africa to get a copy of the Gautrain contract documents. We have even gone to court, and the court instructed that we'd given the documents. We were shown a room full of documents and told we may not touch them. But that's not a matter. So with all due respect, it is impossible in this country to get access to information. And the current processes are totally inadequate. And the reason we have to spell these things out in the law is because this government refuses to make many documents available. So we need to sometimes put these things in law so that we don't have to spend years of our lives trying to get documents out of this government. So please, don't sit here in this committee and pretend that it's simple and easy and we can just go to the Protection of Information Bill and get anything. It is incredibly difficult. We have to clarify some of these things. One of the reasons there is such a big public outcry about this Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project is simply because there is no spelled out procedure in detail as that's why we've got into this mess, because some type of participation in some places in this country is a whitewash. It's not a proper process. And because it's not spelled out, every municipality, every province, and the government does a different thing each time because there is no process. And the public really battle sometimes to get enough information. And when they make submissions, the Honourable Max Sisulu said in Parliament, in his opening address, when he was dealing with the budget of this Parliament last year, that public participation has become a paper-waving exercise, and his specific words were something along the lines that we cannot allow public participation to be fought off. It has got to be done properly via proper processes. So please, let's not sit in this Parliament, Madam Chairperson, and pretend that public participation is done well and that we should not specify things. And let's also not pretend it's easy to get information in South Africa. It is very difficult to get information. Thank you.
I'd like to make some comments here. That public participation came into effect when the ANC government assumed power. There was no public participation in the previous government. There was no transparency in the previous government. Therefore, we can distinguish policy issue from a practice of individuals. And when we talk of a government, we should base our argument on policy of government. It becomes a different issue when we are then saying, as much as there is a policy on public participation, but the practice doesn't relate to the policy, and what do we do in that instance? So we should not, in this meeting, put a situation as if the ANC government is not the one that introduced the public participation policy. It is the ANC government that introduced it. The public participation process was introduced by the ANC. What we should then be saying, what are the gaps that we need to close? And how are we going to close those gaps? And that is the argument in this meeting. We have put, a proposal was made of putting it in a government gazette. A proposal was made to say we can put a notice and then say to people they must access the information through the website. And the proposal is made that we should put that as in the act as an amendment. Another proposal was made to say it should come through a regulation. That is what we should be debating here, not to say that, not to put an argument in relation to the practice as if there is no policy of the country. There is a policy of the country. Public participation came in as a result of an ANC government assuming power. It cannot be credited to any other political party. That credit goes to the ANC.
I will refuse the temptation to respond in the manner in which I would have responded in another platform, because I always look at us as committee members. As such, I think I am covered to a large extent by your input, because surely there are other platforms where parties can all raise their own matters. But I think in the manner in which this bill has been dealt with, I think I want to appreciate also the honourable member from the Freedom Front in terms of raising the matter very sharply, so that where there are gaps in the bill, we can always improve that. And where we, surely, because it's a give and take, this matter, and where there is clarity, and I think to a large extent, he has been clarified where it is not clarified. And if, I would have thought that if there are still grey areas for the party, for the member, he would raise those matters very sharp so that we understand the mandates as members of parliament, what should we do. That is why I requested that our legal people should guide us also, because look, we are not all legal fund, where there are grey areas to be improved and to accommodate some of the concerns that were raised by the honourable member. And as such, this committee will sit down at its own time to assess the inputs based on what has been submitted to us, so that if there is a need for us to intervene further on what has been submitted, we do so as committee members. So, as I'm saying, Chairperson, I wouldn't want to go to divert. And also, the member felt that I did not, I was not heard properly. That's why we take a different route. I think let's confine ourselves to what has been presented. I thank you, Chair.
Honourable Pombo.
Okay, thanks. Look, I don't believe we should be talking about who did what when, because that really isn't our business today. So let us accept that we are now in 2013 and we're dealing with this particular book. And what I would like to ask the presenters is, without getting into the debate about whether we should be talking about policy or practice, because that I also think is and posing probably leads us down the path of temptation, is there any difficulty that the department or the legal advisors have in principle to make it easier for people by codifying it in the legislation to get the information that the public may seek? And we don't have to get into the debate about who brought in transparency. We don't have to get into the debate about whether it is or whether it's difficult. It or isn't difficult. Actually get that today. I just simply want to ask, does it take anything away from anyone to put into the legislation various regulations and mechanisms to get this information easily? In what way are we in any sense going backwards or in a sense weakening the book? So can I just get an answer on that, and then that maybe will take some of the sting out of this debate and you might end up with a better bill with more transparency, which I think that at least all the party can actually agree on, without having to debate who brought it in the first place, and we all want more transparency.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not see any problem including something in this bill. We'll have to think about the wording, and the committee will have to either guide us or we'll have to give options to say that the actual impact assessment must be published in the Government Gazette, or if the committee agrees with what the department says, that it might be very costly, it's a very thick document, that a notice be published in the Government Gazette, drawing attention to where the document can be found, and the document must be publicly made available. So it will be a little bit of a crafting, maybe, thinking how to word that, but to word it and insert it in the bill will not detract from the bill at all.
Thanks, Chairperson. I don't know whether it's time that we should try to ask the committee in directing them as to where can we slot the issue of publishing a notice in the Government Gazette as to the availability of the report. Chairperson, my proposal is that if we look at Clause 3 of the B Bill, B capital A, at the end of that particular B capital A, that is on page 3 of the B Bill, then we can come up with an insertion there that says, or maybe if I can start by reading the whole sentence so that I can remember the area. It's B capital A, clause 3. The agency in cooperation with the municipality, in cooperation with the municipality contemplated in subsection 4B2, and the province in which the proposed toll road is situated, has performed a socio-economic and traffic impact assessment pertaining to the proposed toll road, which must be submitted to the minister and made available to the province and every municipality contemplated in section 4B, and publish a notice in the Government Gazette as to the availability of the report. Then what will happen, this will be an important position to the officials in the agency, to issue a general notice directing members of the public as to where can they do that report, in which website, or where, how can they have access to that notice. The notice will be the one that will specify the website, and also how can they get access to that particular report. We don't have to put such in the legislation, but this will be empowering SANRAL, in fact mandating SANRAL, to place the notice in a government gazette, directing people as to which web address can people view a particular report. then that definitely will cover the concern of the members. Thanks.
Honorable.
Madam Chair, can I just get certainty as to the word that's being inserted? Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you. It's a good proposal. I would just like to pose a further question for everybody who does not have access to the Government Gazette. When Sunval or anybody in terms of this Act makes an invitation to the public to make presentations, then that notice, which presumably would be in newspapers all around the country, should also contain a reference to either the Gazette and the website that would have that information available. So I'm not sure exactly where one would insert something like that, but that would be part of the invitation to the public at large.
We just need to create an empowering provision for that will make create a duty for Sunrise to make sure that the members of the public have got access to this information. Then that matters as where you will be directing members of the public, either by means of the general notice and making reference to the web address or also the location where you can get those sort of kind of reports. And the members of the public either will answer that through website or you can put your physical address within that particular general notice to say we are situated at these particular places, or in that notice you can direct people as to other at your principal place of business. Where else can they get this particular board? That will be stated in the notice itself. We don't have to detail everything within legislation.
I'm not sure, yeah, that's correct. I just wanted to know that if they do make invitations, that this information will also be contained in that invitation that someone makes to the public. But it doesn't have to be as specifically drafted here, as long as there's an empowering provision. And I think someone would know themselves that if they do not, in terms of the invitations, actually make it known to the public in a proper way, then it can be challenged in court. So necessarily they would have to publish it in newspapers as well, and maybe other platforms. Thank you.
Is there any member with any question or comment in relation to what was presented by the Ableton Front Plus and the responses that have been given to those proposals?
Chairperson, I'm happy with the new proposal. I think that will take care of the concern. We must understand the department can't print thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of documents because that makes things very expensive, and we're a party that's very interested in cost-cutting. So I think that proposal is sensible. It will make it available, and people must read the Government Gazette, and you know, I'm sure the media do read it as well. So I'm happy with that proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm widely covered. I'm also agreeing with the other platforms as a position on another level. We must also use our computer offices and so on, so as to assist through our website and so on. Otherwise, I am covered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Is there anyone who would want to make any comments in relation to this? From the legal team or Swaramban or the department?
Chairperson, from the department side, we are happy with the bill as is, with this proposed amendment that needs to be made. We don't want to spoil anything else. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think if we can just make a presentation to the members, if we can have a few minutes to draw something. Because I've looked at where to draft it, and I hear what the department is saying, but it makes that paragraph a little bit long and uncomfortable. So we'll have to either divide it up or maybe add another paragraph. So if we can just have a chance to, from a drafting point of view, just discuss where would be the best fit. But I think we've got the wording to some extent. It is just to make a final proposal to the committee. So that I'm just worried that we come back and it might look different from what was now said, and then the members say, oh, but now you can do what we said. So if we can just have a little bit of leeway to make the draft, the crafting of the draft, just the best fit.
How much time do you need to do that?
If we can have 5 to 10 minutes, so maybe a tea break.
Is there any comment before we grant the tea break? No? Can we pray for tea and allow the legal team to and put their heads together? Thank you. It's a 10-minute tea break.
Thank you.